podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. So this week's guest is an accomplished young chess player, Grandmaster, U.S. Junior Champion a few years back, National High School and here in the U.S. Champion a few years back, and a lot more Scholastic Champion championships than I can name. Grandmaster Akshat Chandra, thanks for joining us, Akshat.
Thanks, Ben. Glad to be on the show. Just want to commend you for running this podcast. Some of the guests you've had on the show are very impressive, and I'm honored to be a part of such a company.
Yeah, I don't know how I managed to trick so many people to coming on, but I'm grateful for it. So Akshat, for those of you listening, some of you will know about Akshat's background, some of you will not. He's quite accomplished young chess player, had the benefit of playing and studying chess both in India and the U.S., so we're going to talk about that briefly. He's also in the midst of a bit of a swirling chess controversy regarding the alleged use of engines online, and we're going to talk about that too. But I want to start with Akshat's unequivocal accomplishments, because he's only 18 but done a lot in the chess world and did a lot rather quickly. You started playing chess at the age of 9, right, Akshat?
Yeah, around 9 to 9 and a half when my family relocated to India. I was born here in the U.S., in New Jersey, and when I was about 9 years old, my family relocated to India for a couple of years, and that's where I stumbled into chess.
Okay, and at what age did you get the GM title?
I believe it was 17. So after a strong start, I had a lot of difficulty securing my last GM norm. I needed what is known as a six-day norm. So FIDE has this requirement that one of the three norms has to come in a tournament that is a minimum of 6 days, and in the U.S. that's extremely rare. Most of the tournaments are 5 days, so I would probably have maybe like one or two 6 day tournaments a year I'd play, and it just took me a while to eventually, you know, get it done. I think almost 2 years just to get that final norm.
So you got close, but then it took you a while to break through.
We've
had a lot of guests who've had that issue, and I know the norms can be a fickle thing. But one thing our guests will definitely be interested in is you had a bit of a meteoric rise. So we've got a lot of listeners interested in getting better at chess. So can you reveal your secrets?
Well, you know, Ben, it's funny. I've received that question so many times, and every time I just can't, you know, think of anything, you know, that I can pinpoint that led to such a meteoric rise. I mean, a couple of things which I can suggest is that I placed more emphasis on the studying of my own games than maybe most people would. I also placed a great emphasis on studying the games of classical players when I was younger. And I think that allowed me to build up, you know, a very strong foundation and base. And so those are probably two factors which I probably placed more emphasis on, which perhaps contributed to this meteoric rise. But if you just ask me, you know, like, what exactly led to this rise, I just can't pinpoint something exact.
So, Akshat, a lot of other guests have also mentioned the importance of studying your own games. What, how'd you decide that was important?
Well, I had the good privilege of having the thing is, when you start out chess, right, there's just so much information out there, and it's kind of almost hard to decide, you know, what exactly to do. There's just countless, you know, methods and all that stuff. And even as a grandmaster today, I still find it hard, you know, sometimes to figure out what exactly I should, you know, place more emphasis on in my training routine. But I think I had the good fortune of having a professional coach very early on, and so that instilled in me some good habits. It was Serbian grandmaster Predrag Trajković, and so I think he's the one who, you know, related to me the emphasis of the importance of studying your own games.
Okay, and when you study your own games, are you, like, what's your methodology? How much time do you spend looking at it? Do you use an engine to go over it?
Okay, so each game I spend a couple of hours on, maybe some games less because they weren't as crucial. But on the really important ones, I spend a couple of hours. I annotated without an engine at first because an annotation is essentially an introspection of your games, your thought process, and so you want to record all that down because the engine can't offer you that. It just offers you, you know, brute force calculation and moves. It's just a random series of moves. So it's important, in my opinion, to analyze without the engine and only after recording down all your thoughts, all the variations you calculated during the game, then to switch on the engine, you know, to confirm certain, you know, calculations that you had made during the game.
Okay, yeah, and I would dare say that that's basically the consensus from guests we've had. Not everyone agrees, but it seems like you do benefit. One does benefit more from really deconstructing your own thoughts first, and only then just figuring it
right,
out.
Right, because it's basically understanding your mind during the game, right?
Yeah,
the engine can offer you that.
Yeah, and Akshay, we've been privileged to have a couple guests from India. I am Sagar Shah, and
oh yeah, I know him. He's a friend.
Oh, good. Yeah, and top young player Vidit Garaji recently joined.
Oh yeah,
Nigra.
I know him as well. Yeah. Oh,
excellent. So. And we're always interested in hearing about different chess cultures, Akshat. So we've gotten a little bit of perspective about India and why they're crushing the chess world. But it occurs to me that you sort of have a unique perspective in that you can talk about the chess culture both in India and here in the U.S. So how do you compare the two? Were there any stark differences when you made your way from India to the United States at the age of 13?
Yes. I guess the main thing... The main difference is the sort of the conditions provided in chess tournaments in the U.S. and in India. In India, it's much more similar to Europe. The tournaments are conducted over several days. There are many single round days, less double round days. Whereas in the U.S., it's just, you know, nonstop, two rounds a day. It's not very conducive to chess improvement and your overall health. Whereas in India, the conditions are certainly better, I'd say.
That's interesting because, you know, on an economic level, it's kind of the converse. But I guess as we talked about with Sagar Shah in particular, there is strong interest in and support for chess there.
Yeah, definitely. Chess is very well supported and funded in India.
And you, by the time you came to U.S., you were like well on your way in chess improvement. Like,
yeah, I think I was an FM, maybe like 2280 or 2300.
Okay, so you were really getting after it there in India.
Yeah.
And what was it like coming generally? Like, what was it like switching cultures?
Well, I mean, it was sort of just like, you know, taking a step back into my past because I spent 9 years in the U.S. first, right? So, I mean, I was excited that I would finally be able to watch my beloved Jets.
Nice. Yeah, I know you're big on Twitter about the Jets.
Yeah.
So you grew up in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Any other favorite sports teams?
Well, recently I started watching hockey, so the Devils and the Blues.
Okay, supporting. Yeah, so you were saying before we recorded, you're in St. Louis now, so supporting the local teams.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. So, Akshay, we have a question from a supporter of the podcast. They get advance word of who will be on the show, and they send in questions. So, Sanat Singhai asks, "What is an effective but uncommon training method, tool, book, etc.? Who trained or influenced you in your journey?" So you already mentioned who trained you, but you could mention, you know, historical chess influences and also any resources that you considered indispensable in your chess development.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. These questions are always so tough because, I mean, I know these people, you know, are genuinely expecting me to give some deep, insightful response, but it's very hard to come up with one. So let's see. Well, I don't think I've ever had sort of, you know, certain historical influence, so to speak. An unconventional training method. Well, I think perhaps I emphasized playing more blitz online chess than most people would. You know, there's, I guess, sort of a debate, you know, is blitz helpful or harmful to your chess? In my opinion, blitz is extremely underrated. I feel that blitz is extremely useful in, you know, building up your tactics and your short calculation. And I've played many online blitz games. I mean, I've just for like the last 7-8 years, it's just been a lot of blitz for me online. And I think that could be one reason also, which sort of contributed to my meteoric rise. I got into an accelerated path because of this sharpness I developed from playing so much blitz. Of course, I'm not advising, you know, to just sit there playing blitz all day. I mean, there has to be certain moderation, but I think playing blitz is an unconventional method which could be useful to one's development.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like consensus is moving in that direction. When I was a kid, my coach would always, like, he was anti-blitz, and I think that that was sort of a common strain in the chess education thought mm-hmm. at the time. And now yeah. with people like Hikaru Nakamura and, you know, so many people who grew up playing chess online, and you can't really argue with their results.
Yeah.
I think people are coming around to that school of thought. So mm-hmm. But when you play Blitz, when you played as a kid, would you yeah. analyze the games, or would you just have one of them?
Oh, yeah, for sure, and I still do this. After every, at least if I'm playing a strong opponent, if it's, you know, some lower-rated player, I probably wouldn't. But if I'm playing a stronger opponent or another Grandmaster or title player, I always analyze the games. It's very useful to see, you know, like, how was your, you know, thinking in situations where you're in time pressure. And it's also very useful for improving your openings, because many times in Blitz we face offbeat stuff, and then you could just go back and check, okay, so this is how I should play next time. And then you come back next game and you show your improvements. So that's how I benefit from Blitz.
Okay. And now that you're in St. Louis, you mentioned again when we were chatting briefly before the recording that you're focusing on chess full time and have been for a year or two now. So yeah. What's your day-to-day life like?
Well, it's pretty much just training on my chess and focusing on, you know, improving all aspects of my game so I can eventually be strong enough to break into the chess elite, you know, the top 10 or whatever.
Oh, wow. Lofty goal.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, if you're going as Jets quarterback Joe Namath said, Hall of Famer, right? If you're not going all the way, why go at all?
Yeah, no, I agree. And you're, you know,
that's why we moved to St. Louis, because where else? I mean, this is the best place to be for chess in the U.S.
You think it's better than New York?
Oh, definitely. I mean, just by being in St. Louis alone, it's better.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're definitely going to cross paths with more elite players.
I wouldn't say that, because it's not often, you know, it's not like you're just seeing an elite player here every day. I mean, you get to see for example, Sinkfield Cup, you get to see the players in person, but that's only like once a year. But just being, you know, in close proximity to the St. Louis and the club, I think you would get more opportunities than if you were, say, in New Jersey, whether it's playing in certain tournaments or you know, having a chance to work with a residence grandmaster. You know, they have a residence in GM program where a resident grandmaster comes every month, and you know, you might have an opportunity to work with him. So those are some ways you can benefit just by being in St. Louis.
Well, but as a grandmaster yourself, have you availed yourself of that opportunity? Have you worked with the GMs in residence?
Oh yeah, it's not as frequent as one would think, because many times they have IMs or lower title players. But from time to time, some strong GMs come in, and it's great, you know, sparring with them and working with them.
Nice. Yeah, I guess so many people just pass through town that you must get some good Blitz games in.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Cool. Okay, so Aksha, I think that we are ready for the moment when we must dive into this chess.com controversy.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I'll just try. Here's going to be my goal as host. Basically, I think people can listen to the evidence. And for background, so you recently won a Title Tuesday event for chess.com, and you wrote a blog.
I didn't win the Title Tuesday. I came like sixth or something.
Okay. I'm glad we have you here to correct me.
yeah.
So you came in sixth in chess.com, and then it's Title Tuesday event, which a lot of the top players in the world compete in. And then the next day you were... When you were unable to log into chess.com, and I'll let you pick up the story in a minute, but just to give listeners who aren't aware of the story, like some background on where they can go for information, Aksha wrote a blog post discussing this that I'll put a link to in the show description. And there's an epic thread on Chess Reddit, shout out to Chess Reddit, discussing this. And I'm sure in other corners of the chess internet, there's other discussions. So lot of talk about it, but basically there's no substitute for just hearing what you have to say about it. And my goal as host will be to ask questions that people have, you know, submitted to me, and to ask questions that I see raised online, but to remain neutral and to let people form their own conclusions. So with that out of the way, Aksha, why don't you pick up the thread and tell the story of what happened when you found out that your account was banned?
Well, yeah, I think you recapped it pretty well. I mean, after the second Title Tuesday in April, I was unable to log into my account the next day. And I sent an email to Chess.com's general staff asking how can I resolve the issue, and then I received this bolt out of the blue from Danny Wrench saying that my account's been closed for a fair play violation, and yeah, that's pretty much where it started.
Okay. Danny Wrench, the vice president of Chess.com, as most listeners probably know. So before we get back to your story, actually, Akshat, I want to take a sort of macro view of how you think cheating in online chess, engine use in online chess should be handled, because it's unavoidable.
For sure. I understand.
So what do you think? Chess.com is doing a lot to promote chess, and they're putting money into the pockets of chess professionals by having events like the Title Tuesdays and the Pro Chess League. And unfortunately, since engines are the best players in the world and everyone has access to them, they have this recurring problem of people trying to cheat. But obviously, they're not in the room with the people on the computer. So do you have any ideas of how this could be handled?
Well, you know, I mean, it's, of course, there's probably no easy solution, and I honestly cannot suggest anything because I'm not an expert on the subject. It would be irresponsible to do so, but I do feel like at least there should be some avenue for a person who is being accused, despite him believing he's innocent, to, you know, at least explain himself, right? It shouldn't be just a one-way street.
Okay, now, but what do you mean by believing you're innocent? Because I mean, you're the one person who knows, chess.com has algorithms where they say they have a very high probability. And
well, I mean, in my case, when I say believing, of course, I know I can unequivocally state I've never cheated ever. But I'm just using from their context, how would they see me? They would say, OK, this guy believes he's not cheating. Right. I'm using their wording.
Gotcha. So back to the question, what could they do?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on the subject, so I can't really offer any, suggestion on how cheating in chess should be combated. I just feel like it should be a little more of an open process.
Okay. And here's a couple, other sort of, macro questions from supporter of the podcast, Tyron Price. Yes. How prevalent do you think computer cheating is on the internet? And do you think the possibility of false positives outweigh the benefits of secretive computer cheat detection algorithms?
What would you mean by false positives?
So false positives are one where a player's play is flagged because it matches the engine at beyond a certain threshold,
right?
But the person did not use an engine.
Okay. Okay, what was the first point again? I'll answer
that. The first one is, how prevalent do you think computer cheating is on the internet?
I would say, I mean, personally, I feel that it's not overly prevalent. I mean, there are some players who I feel like when I play with that you know, they're cheating or something's amiss, but I very rarely get that feeling. I think at least on chess.com, which is where I was primarily playing, on their side, it's mostly the untitled accounts which are the cheaters. I've almost never ever suspected, you know, any of my titled opponents to be cheating. But it might happen for all I know.
Yeah, I mean, it does happen. I mean, we don't know, again, because generally the way they handle this is they don't
right, I'm aware.
They don't make it public. Like, yeah. I wouldn't, you know, if you didn't make your blog posts defending it, I wouldn't have suggested you come on the podcast.
Right, yeah.
But since it was clearly something that you wanted to discuss, I was happy to do it. I mean, it's an ongoing issue in chess, unavoidable.
Yeah, that's why I made it public also, because I mean, I know I didn't cheat, so like there's nothing for me to hide, and people are going to wonder, why am I not playing on chess.com anymore? Well, so I just want to, you know, put it out there. Here's the reason why.
Right. Yeah. What I was starting to say, is, there's been in the past, some accounts have sort of disappeared after winning prominent events. And
yeah, I'm aware. Yes.
Yeah. So one can draw their own conclusion about what happened. But this was a case where one might have drawn that conclusion, but they didn't. As it turns out, people don't have to infer because you're willing to discuss it openly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know if you've seen the data of if you know how this these programs work that compare the
I'd be happy to know, because I'm, like I said, I'm not an expert on this stuff. So
okay, I mean, I'm not either, but I did sort of wade my way through some of the discussion of it. And basically, mm-hmm. There's programs that look at basically the percentage of the time that a person plays the best move in a given situation.
And what would constitute the best move, like the number one engine move?
Yeah. So there's some programs that do number one engine move, and there's some programs that do like a percentage of moves that don't have a negative impact on the engine analysis of your position, basically.
What does that mean, like a negative impact? Like the evaluation just stays the same?
Yeah, stays the same or gets better as compared to like, taking a move that takes your position from minus 0.2 to minus 0.7 or something. That wouldn't be counted as a human move.
So you're saying that if someone's the evaluation dropped from minus 0.2 to minus 0.7, that wouldn't be counted as a human move?
No, that would be counted as a human.
That would be counted as a human move. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So this guy, E4 guy, who I wish I could attribute by name, but I couldn't find his name on Chess Reddit, but he and a few other guys, basically use this program called PGN. Let's see. It's a freeware program called PGN Spy, where mm-hmm. basically you can compare, as I said, you can compare, the moves that are made in a given game to the engine generated best move. And they're able to compare the percentages of a given player. So yours, the best move of all played are in the range in the games that they've highlighted out of like 60 to 70%. And right. they also analyzed the games from the candidates, the recently completed candidates tournament. And uh-huh. those were a little bit lower. I mean, those were, so yours on April 17th, 60%. April 3rd, 63%. April 4th, 70%. And the candidates were 64%.
April 4, there was nothing on April 4.
Oh, sorry. April 4, 2017. So the first two were 2018. The third was 2017, April 4th.
Last year. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
So wide sample, and I get why that would be confusing. And then in this year's candidates, basically those numbers were in the same ballpark. So Aronian 64%, Caruana 68%. So basically they're saying the 3-minute games that you played were at the level of 6-hour classical by the best players in the world.
Well, that's very funny to hear, because whenever I would go through my games, I'd always think that, okay, my games, there's a lot of stuff to work on, a lot of mistakes here and there. I mean, it's not like I'm playing perfect chess here. I mean, it's kind of funny that the numbers would show that. And, I mean, do you know how these numbers are reached?
Like I said, my understanding of the algorithm is that it compares the move you make to the computer-generated best move. Right. And it's just a percentage of time. So it doesn't mean that every move you make is going to be brilliant, but it means a higher percentage are going to be the best move than... Then Hikaru, they looked at, Hikaru Nakamura, one of the best blitz players in the world. You were playing the best move a significantly higher percentage of the time than he was, on a par with Magnus Carlsen. So if nothing else, I guess do you understand how this would generate suspicion?
Yeah, for sure. I understand what you're saying. It's just that it's hard to believe that, I would have never considered my chess to be, anything eye-popping or anything. I mean, for me, it's just a bunch of normal games, win some good games, win some bad games. I never ever thought that I was playing anything exceptionally well.
But your results were pretty strong, no?
I mean, I was very close to coming first both times, but I never did win it. I always ended up stumbling towards the end. So, coming top 10 in Title Tuesday is kind of average, because if you see how many people are tied, there's a lot. But okay, this is very interesting that you've told me about this, because I had no idea. So the issue here seems to be that my numbers are correlating in a way that would be considered suspicious, correct?
Yes.
So let me just think. So it's very strange, because I had no idea about this until you just told me. Because the reasoning chess.com gave me is very different from what you're saying. So either they're not giving the whole story, or people are just going off on a tangent. I don't know. But for example, I was told by chess.com that Danny, he said that, just to clarify the semantics, we're not calling into question any particular performances out of the single set of games from 2015. So for me, I've just had this thing in my mind, hey, 2015, why are they like bringing up something from 2015? If they thought it was so obvious then, why didn't they just, you know, ban me then? Why are they bringing this up 3 years later? So that's basically what I was, the information I was operating on. But I'm glad that you you brought this up, because I had no idea.
Yeah, and this is in the public domain. I'm taking in good faith that this is, I didn't generate this data myself. So, mm-hmm. If it's not right, I apologize. I am making the leap of faith that this person didn't just like make up these numbers.
Mm-hmm. Because what I'm saying is that, why didn't they just come out and say it's your Title Tuesday performances, which we feel are suspicious. Why are they like bringing up something from 2015? That's what's bizarre to me. And now that I think about it.
Yeah. I mean, I could speculate. I don't know if,
Sure, please do. I mean, how would you as a neutral party perceive the situation?
Well, a theory was floated in this thread on Reddit that maybe they had a longstanding suspicion of you using engine assistance, and mm-hmm. they felt that maybe your recent, the person, whoever posted this in the thread posited that your recent play was suspicious, but maybe not a smoking gun, but they felt mm-hmm. that what was older was even more conclusive. So if, chess.com, generally they're not looking, they don't have a clear incentive to just shut down random young prominent grandmasters accounts. Without cause.
In a way, this is kind of sad, because they seem to think I was playing better chess 3 years ago than I was today.
Right, possibly.
So, I mean, that's kind of sad to hear, considering I've been working very hard for the last 3 years and I'm a chess professional at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's still best, it's still a world-class level, so you would have nothing to hang your head about. the way you played either in 2015 or 2018. Mm-hmm. And there also was... E4 guy also looked at your play in the Pro Chess League, where there's a little bit more scrutiny in terms of how players are monitored, mm-hmm. and your play was not as strong then.
I know I can. That's very easily I can attribute to that. It's you see in chess. My main issue so far has been my time troubles, and that sort of spilled over to the Pro Chess League games. I was playing well in many of the games, and I didn't convert several winning positions. I ended up losing those games or drawing because of time trouble. Because Pro Chess League is like a tournament format, right? The games mean something. And so I ended up allowing my, over-the-board issues to spill over into the Pro Chess League, whereas in Blitz games, I play more freely because, there's not really much risk. There's nothing to lose. It's just, making moves, basically. So I think that would explain why my Pro Chess League games weren't as high quality.
It's still, to be playing as strong as the candidates and the, as the top players in the world in slow chess in a 3 minute game, it's.
Is that even possible to compare? First of all, like classical to Blitz, isn't that sort of apples to oranges?
Well, you're just comparing the output of an engine to the move that was played, so.
I just feel like there's so many variables here, because when I go through my games, feel like I've made so many mistakes, and like here I am being told that I'm playing at a world-class level. I mean, that's kind of hard to believe.
Yes, well, chess is a humbling game. I can definitely relate to that.
Because like, for example, how do they even determine something is considered a world-class? Like, do they take into account whether the guy knew the opening really well, or whether, he had analyze this line so well that he was just so comfortable with the middle games, or do they take into account that the opponent messed up the opening and this guy just had a easy game the entire way? Any move would be considered good. There are like so many like variables here, it's hard to even understand.
Yeah, these are good questions, and at some point I, as a podcast host, would definitely like to have a cheat detection expert on. So mm-hmm. if anyone's listening and that's your field, I know there's a couple prominent people that are on my list and that I'd like to have on and get these questions answered myself, mm-hmm. because if I speculate, it's more likely than not going to be wrong. So there was a couple other threads or ideas I wanted to talk about just from this event. So mm-hmm. let's think about chess.com's perspective. So
sure.
Their primary goal, I would think, has to be to have a you know, cheating-free environment. Did you see Danny Wrench's article in Chess Life by any chance about their cheat detection?
When was this?
February, I think.
No, maybe I'll go. I might have the magazine. I might check it out. But no, okay. I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, basically, they have four statisticians working full-time. They have, like, an algorithm, basically.
Right. Yes, he mentioned that to me in his email. I think I wrote about that in my blog.
Okay. Yeah, and they have, like, an algorithm that doesn't even account for who the player is. It just, I mean, a lot of what they'll only divulge so much, which I know is a source of frustration for you, about how their cheat detection systems work. But basically, they don't, they're not saying, they're not even looking at the player. They're just looking at the moves of a given game, and they're able to to mine all of the games that are played on the site.
And they're drawing comparisons to other, you know, the best people who play chess, basically, right?
Right. And the best. So I don't know about chess.com. The stuff where I'm comparing it to the best players is from Reddit. I don't know what chess.com does. But, you know, there is that, like, cap system where they're able to historically look at the best move of different champions through time versus an engine and evaluate who objectively played the best. So, I mean, stuff like that is out there, and it wouldn't surprise me if they use that. But in any event, you know, I would think that they're, like, what do you think would be in it for them? So, like, what do you think is governing their decision because to shut down your account? You think it's an honest mistake or a vendetta or what?
Well, okay, that's just speculation at this point. There's nothing really in it for them. I mean, the only you know, sort of mild thing which I could imply was that, you know, Nakamura, their ambassador, has accused me of cheating in the past, and so he would be, you know, someone who could have an influence. But again, speculation. But what I'm saying is that, I mean, how can you, like, state that with 100% certainty, based on whatever analysis you do, that, you know, we're right, you're wrong, and either admit to it or, you know, you're off the site. I mean, it just seems foolish to me to blindly trust the analysis that they do every time, because while it may be right sometimes, it may be wrong other times, and I'm an exception, right? I'm an exception to their system, and I'm not the only one, because shortly after writing my blog post, I received an email from another junior titled player who told me that the same thing happened with him a couple months back, and the only reason he, to quote him, fake confessed to a bunch of random games was so he wouldn't miss the Pro Chess League. I just find it, I mean, it just seems very strange that, you know, you would just blindly, like, trust whatever the system tells you without using some personal judgment. And, you know, like, in my opinion, the chess-specific breakdown should always overrule any of the analysis that they conduct with their algorithms or whatever.
So what do you mean by that?
Like I referenced earlier, right, like, the opening, like, did the guy know the opening really well? He knew the middle game so well, he had played games over the board in this line, so he just knew it really well? Or, you know, did the other guy mess up early on and he just had an easy game for, the, you know, I mean, those type of things.
Sorry, I was just...
basically, as opposed to whatever, you know, like, graph they may be looking at, which, you know, tracks whatever player, you know, a player's moves or whatever.
Yeah. So, Akshat, let's switch gears. So, yeah, I know that you mentioned that you're a sports fan. So, when these guys get flagged for, like, PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs, which happens less in football, American football, which you mentioned, but I'm a baseball fan, and especially about 10 years ago before they sort of tightened up their drug testing, people would get flagged and the athlete would basically always deny it. So what's your inclination when you hear that? Like when an athlete, say on a team, gets flagged?
Right. Here's the thing, right? Chess.com, they're not making a public statement about this. They're keeping it, you know, under wraps, confidential. So, I mean, it's you can't compare it to baseball, right? Where everyone knows off the bat that this guy is being accused of using PEDs, right?
Right. Well, they do keep it. I mean, this is might be neither here nor there, but they do keep it. They only announce it publicly, like a second test. Like you have to, in order to get suspended publicly, I think you have to test for a drug twice. So the first time, I think they do keep it confidential. But anyway, I was just curious. It's a bit off track.
Well, in this case, how often does the player make it known to the public that he was, deemed to have been using PEDs? In this case, in this situation, I, as a player, am making the public aware of the situation, right?
Right. Do you have any thoughts of litigation? Just out of curiosity.
No, that's not going to happen. I mean, I have my family has neither time or resources for such, outlandish, action or whatever. I mean, it's for me, the main thing is, I don't mind not playing on chess.com. It's just that because I never really enjoyed the site. I found on other sites superior in terms of interface and user experience. It's just that the chess.com had the strongest player base. And so that's something I wouldn't have access to now. And it's also the manner in which I've been dismissed, which is what I have the issue with.
Okay. Yeah, that's understandable. I mean,
I do hope that I would be able to play in the Pro Chess League. I mean, it's sort of an example of another sort of the way they sort of, engage in a little arm twisting. He implied that I would be missed in the Pro Chess League. And that's sort of, creating another pressure point for me to confess. And I just flat out said I'm not going to be coerced into admitting to something I didn't do. So I do hope that the commissioner, Greg Shade, will, make his own decisions and not just blindly follow what chess.com tells him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that would work. I don't know if he would have that authority if he were so inclined, mm-hmm. and so on. But I mean, I do know that these aren't decisions they take lightly. From what I've heard, they tend to err on the side of caution when it comes to these things, because there is sort of, I think Danny might have even mentioned in the article on Chess Life, they have to worry, just as a private entity, they have to worry. It's nice that you mentioned that you're not thinking about litigation, but that's something that has to be on their mind if they feel like there's a risk that they're
I understand. That's why they toe the line with their wording and whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why they keep it private and mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Okay, I think we've more or less.
I mean, they're wrong. I mean, just so I want to make sure that the viewers understand that. I mean, they're completely wrong in my case, and that's why I've made this public.
Yeah, and it's good that you came on, and people can hear what you have to say. Certainly, as I mentioned before we're recording, the one thing we know for sure is you're the only person who really knows what happened. So there's no one else. I mean, there's statistics and probabilities, but 99% or whatever they say is not 100%. I want to thank you for doing this. I'm sure this,
Yeah, sure. I have no problem. I'm happy to do this because, I feel I've been wronged, and more than happy to provide whatever, answers or more details that people might be interested in.
Cool. So I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I haven't forgotten anything from this topic.
Sure. Ben, if you think about it, right? Why would someone who is, U.S. junior champion, national high school champion, someone who has, moved to St. Louis, sacrificed, stuff, moved to St. Louis, trying to become a chess professional, trying to make it big, and I've deferred college for 2 years. Why would he even, do all this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that thought did cross my mind. But in terms of parsing motivations, mm-hmm. there's chess.com's motivation. Like someone made a mistake, right? We just don't know who it was. And mm-hmm. and their motivation, it wouldn't be clear to me either. I mean, I guess, as you said, basically it would be a mistake if they did it. Their stats and their algorithm would be wrong.
Right.
But I mean, they've got testimonials from Harvard stats professors.
No, I understand.
And stuff,
I was shown one of those testimonials, and even in those testimonials, nowhere does it say that if chess.com claims something, it's 100% true. It only spoke of a high probability of being accurate, and that's the case here. Whatever low probability percentage there is, that's the percentage I'm part of. And also that other player I told you about, that other junior who told me that the same thing had happened to him.
Yeah. Okay. I think we can leave it there. I think we've given this a full airing, so I really appreciate it. But let's end on a happier note, Akshat. Let's talk about what you have coming up. So do you have any tournaments planned in the next few months?
I'll probably be playing in the Chicago Open later this month. It's towards the end of May. And then after that, I'm not sure, but I'll definitely be playing the U.S. Junior Championship once again in July. I hope to recapture the title.
Wow, yeah, your young monsters are impressive. So you are in it, I'm guessing, Awander Liang. Who else?
I don't know if he'll play this year. Last year he won it. It's kind of a shame. I played really well last year. I was the only undefeated player, and I just didn't convert several winning positions because of those time travel issues I mentioned earlier. But I'm hoping I can correct those this year and, you know, have a more positive result.
So you don't know the field yet?
But as of now, I have no idea who's going to play. I mean, probably speculate, like some people like Wander or Ru Feng Li might play. Other than that, I mean, there's nothing confirmed yet.
Do you know if, like, someone on the scale of, like, or at the level of Jeffrey Zhang, do you think he would turn it down at this point, or is it something?
I mean, he's already won it before, so, and he's much higher rated than the rest of the field at the moment, so I don't see what, you know, incentive he has to play.
Okay. And what's your take on the World Championship? Who's going to win?
Okay. So, yeah, that's an interesting topic. I do think it'll be more interesting than the Carlsen-Koryakin match. But again, I have to, you know, go out on a limb and pick Magnus again.
Yeah, it's hard to bet against him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, because see, one thing is that one of, you know, Magnus's weak points, and this is obviously relatively speaking, is considered to be his opening preparation, right? Whereas someone like Fabiano is, I would say, you know, yeah, he has very good opening preparation. But then when you look at the games that they play, at least the most recent one from Grenke, Magnus played what you'd consider probably a slightly dubious variation and still outplayed him with ease. So, I mean, that's kind of scary to think that he doesn't really need openings to beat this guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would say Magnus is a very strong favorite to win.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I feel like Fabiano's definitely closing the gap. So I'm excited for it. It should be.
Yeah, maybe he can surprise, but I'd probably heavily back Magnus in this match.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, I don't know if you're... I don't want to encourage gambling, but the line's probably... It's probably not going to be... I'm guessing Magnus will be in the range of 65-35 or 60-40%, something like that.
Yeah, so that sounds accurate. Maybe I'd say I'd be even more audacious and say 70-75%.
Okay. And Fabiano picked it at 50-50, as did a couple guests. So people definitely have differing opinions. And I'm just excited that we have two young, well-spoken, amazing chess players getting ready to take the biggest stage.
Sure, yeah. But hey, I'll be more than happy if Fabiano does well. You know, he's an American. He's a nice guy. I've met him a few times, and I'll root for him as much as I think Magnus would win. I'll be happy with Fabiano upset. So
yeah,
best of luck to him.
Yeah, it's kind of a win-win for chess fans. So
yeah, and I think he is the best challenger to Magnus as of now. He's the most stable. He's the most consistent. He's the most, you know, down to earth. You know, he's level-headed. So I think those are qualities which definitely give him a better chance than his peers.
Yeah, the stable, I think, is really important. Like the way that he was able to bounce back from his loss late in the candidates and just finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that was very impressive, of course.
Yeah, so I can't wait till November.
Yeah.
Okay, Akshat, anything else we need to hit before I let you go?
I don't know. You tell me. Is there anything else you'd like to ask?
I think I've got it covered. You know, I'd like to have you back sometime because You're so young. You're only 18. So I love to talk to chess players, and I love to hear stories, and our listeners love to hear stories about, like, players' travels and encounters with legends and stuff like that. But, you know, you're young enough where if anything springs to mind, I'm sure our listeners would love to hear it. But if not, maybe some other time.
Sure, yeah, definitely. Down the road, we could do this again. I'd be happy.
Excellent. All right. Well, Akshat, I really appreciate it. I know that, you know, this whole thing, regardless of, what actually happened, which again, you only know, it's, you know, I'm sure it hasn't been a fun few weeks for you, let's say.
Yeah, it's taken up quite a bit of time and energy, that's for sure.
Cool. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Akshat. Oh, and if people want to reach you, I know you've got a Twitter account. Is there any...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, and you've got a blog and you started streaming, right?
Yeah, you can just put it in the description or whatever. I'm streaming on twitch.tv/ my name, Akshat Chandra, on Lee Chess. I'll be streaming the titled arena in a couple of days. So that'll be exciting. And you can follow me on Twitter or whatever.
Okay, sounds good. I will link to all of that good stuff. Okay, thank you, Akshat.
All right, thanks, Ben.
The new Perpetual Chess theme music is courtesy of Geert Vandervelt. Special shout out to him. I also want to thank everyone who supports the podcast. That includes people who tell their friends about it, people who write positive reviews on Apple Podcasts, and most of all, those who have donated to support the show. I spend about 5 hours a week on each episode, and even though I love doing it, it can be hard to find the time. Without the support of my Patreon and PayPal Perpetual Chess partners, the show would not be possible. They are Adam Ralph, Adam Vrancoulge, Adrian Gutierrez, Andres Krizdwa, I hope I did okay there, Andres, on your name, Alex Pejas, Chris Wainscott, Chad Hilton, Chris Lott, Christopher Wood, Coach J's Chess Academy, Chris Flanagan, Daniel Naylor, Daniel Schaefer, Gary Andrews, Greg Shahadi, James Benastia, Jason Dunbar, Jennifer Valens, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, Johnny McMenamin, Kelly Palmer, Krishna Gopalakrishnan, Lorraine Dore, Matthew Passy, Macaulay Peterson, Matthew Tedesco, Pascal Charbonneau, Paul Swaney, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchek, Robert Steiner, Tatya Vabrahamian, Thomas Stonix, Thomas Tachenko, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotello, Victor Vrancoul, Zhao Cheng, and Jivko Stoyanov. Thanks a lot, everyone. I'll be back next week with another great...
Sports Social Podcast Network.